Episode 274 of Way of the Warrior. We're going to be talking about UFC Fight Night 66. We'll talk about what's next for Stipe Miocic. And we will get Ken Evans' book review on Ronda Rousey's new book that came out this week.
There's a book?
You read it, right? That was your assignment.
The body issue of ESPN? Yeah, I read that a while ago.
All right. We'll get his full update next. It's Way of the Warrior.
Yeah. Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
And it's all over!
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hulkrin, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. It's kind of been a crazy week, and I want to start off on a bit of a sad note as Corey Hill, ex-Tough alum, was fighting for his life after suffering some complications due to pneumonia, and he passed yesterday. So a sad goodbye to Corey Hill. So UFC vet no longer with us, and we start on a bit of a sad note. So if you remember Corey Hill, he was he had that fight where he broke his leg in half after that kick. That Corey Hill. So if you're thinking, it sounds familiar. I don't know who that guy is. So he lost his life battling with pneumonia.
He was only 36, right?
Which sounds like a terrible way to go. Just a terrible, terrible way to go. So you know, our thoughts are with the family and of course all the fans of Corey Hill. And now we move on to last week. We were in Australia as Ken Evans, or I guess Joe would actually say this would be his part where he would tell us that this card wasn't for us. So the card that wasn't for us.
So I didn't watch.
Featured Mark Hunt being beat to death by Stipe Miocic for, the better part of 25 minutes. And a lot of questions come out of that fight. Most importantly, I think, is, you know, when we're talking about the safety of the fighters. And I know that Mark Hunt is one of those guys who's got a huge heart, and lots of refs want to give him the benefit of the doubt. I know, Ken, you've talked a number of times on the show that a great ref has to understand who is in the ring and what that person can do. And you have, being a person who's watched mixed martial arts for the better part of 25 years, are very familiar with what Mark Hunt was able to do in Pride. And so he gets a bit of a pass. But I mean, if you look up the Instagram photo of the aftermath, it was just, I think, almost two whole rounds of unnecessary punishment.
Yeah, it's always tough, though, because, I mean, you've seen guys like Mark Hunt take punishment like that, and you've seen him come back in fights, and especially veterans in this situation. And Stipe, you know, he's got some fights under him, but, I mean, it's hard to line up a bunch of fights like Mark Hunt has in his career at this point.
Sure.
There's not a lot of fighters in any division that are going to do that. So you really want to give him as much time to work and as much punishment as he can take, so to speak, to work as well. And it's kind of tough in those situations because you're looking at it and you're seeing just a dominant performance. Like you said, better part of two rounds, I believe, in the middle of that fight, right?
Yeah.
For the fourth and the fifth?
I mean, it ended in the fourth. So,
it ended in the fourth? Okay.
But like two and three, it's one of those things where when you watch Stipe go against Junior Dos Santos and he loses that decision and he goes, I'm going back to the gym and I'm going to change some things because I learned a bit about this fight. I didn't get knocked out, but I didn't win it either. And he comes back and he's taking Mark Hunt down whenever he wants to. He's mounting Mark Hunt. He's putting his hand over Mark Hunt's mouth as he's punching him in the face. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was as close to just an absolute drubbing as you would ever see of two guys at that level.
Yeah.
Right?
And he was telling the ref during the fight and during the beating he was fine. So it's tough. I mean, if you've got a guy who verbally is letting you know he's okay, are you going to stop the fight no matter what's happening as a ref?
And I don't know the answer to that because
I'm not saying you necessarily should. I'm not being accusatory there.
I know. But you get, of course, in the age of social media, you get the benefit of things that you wouldn't normally see. An instantaneous shot of his hamburger face makes you regret watching that fight and how long it went, right?
Like
when you look at a guy like that and how old he is and the damage that he took, you go, I mean, should we have this conversation that maybe, and I think you've said this when we've talked about boxing, maybe the fighter in the middle of it shouldn't be the one making that call because their pride is going to get in the way. Oh, I'm Mark Hunt. I've got a huge a huge heart. Everyone has told me I've had a huge heart. Mm-hmm. My heart eventually will kick in, and I'll win this fight.
But you can see where, from the ref's position, if he's got some questions or qualms about it, if a fighter's saying he's okay, he's got to take that information and use it. Now, does he automatically take that information and not stop a fight simply because a fighter says he's okay? No. That's not the referee's job. The referee's there for the safety of the fighters. And in a situation like this, you don't necessarily trust the judgment of the fighter, but I think you do take it as part of that stream of information that's coming in and what you already know. What you already know is this is Mark Hunt. You know what kind of fights he's gone through. You know he's been beaten up before and come back and won. So you're trying to give the guy who's a veteran, the guy who's basically the hometown hero where they were having
sure,
this card.
Yes.
Basically, you're trying to give him, you know, the opportunities to win and still keep him safe. I know the picture afterward looks terrible, but a lot of times we see winners. Remember John Jones when he beat Alexander Gustafsson?
He
looked like he took a couple of drives home after that fight. That's what he looked like. So it's not always that picture after the fight either that you can use to judge what happened in the fight during the fight, if that makes enough sense. Because you're a referee. You're in there in the moment. You're trying to use all the information you have. You know this is Mark Hunt. You know that he's a tough guy. He's telling you he's fine. So I think in that case, as bad as it looked, I can't really have a big problem with the referee in this instance.
Do you think this win, Stipe's win over Mark Hunt, elevates him to title contention yet?
I love this win over Mark Hunt. I don't know about title contention, but like you said, he only lost the decision to Junior Dos Santos. So, I mean, he's been in the big leagues with these dudes, and I didn't know where Stipe was. I'm not sure what Stipe can or can't do. I'm certainly looking forward to his next fight now. I want to see what he can do. And again, that heavyweight division is not that deep. You've got Verdum. You've got Junior Dos Santos. If Velasquez ever trains without kicking the crap out of himself,
right?
You know, you've got those four guys, and then there's a pretty big drop-off, right? I mean, out of those four?
Sure.
I mean, I wouldn't mind maybe. I know Mir just got signed to a fight. I forget who he's fighting.
Who is Mir?
He just got lined up for a fight. I just saw it this morning. But, I mean, you know, a guy, Miocic and Mir, I'd love to see that kind of fight. Might not happen depending on how that fight goes.
Oh, the Todd Duffy thing finally got signed. Yeah.
So Todd Duffy, you know, is taking on Frank Mir. I always kind of like Frank Mir fighting dudes because you can kind of see where they are.
Sure.
Because we kind of know what Frank Mir is. At this point.
Yes.
That's not a bad thing. That's just a very easy way to gauge things. I mean, a guy like Mark Hunt, I think he's only 32, right? He's not actually that old.
No, he's not that old at all. No.
I mean, yeah, he's old in the fighting game. Let me look that up, too, because I'm not sure how old. Oh, he's 41. No, he's pretty old, even for fighting. My bad. Must have had the ages mixed up. I thought he was younger. Must be the chubbiness. Gives him a youthful look. Thought he was younger. Never mind. But anyways, in this situation, I think I want to see Stipe take a step up and see who can fight that's in the upper echelon of that division. Has he actually gotten better? You mentioned, you know, after that fight, he went back and he reworked some things in his game. And it looked like it worked great against Mark Hunt. Will it do the same against other fighters in that division?
And I guess we'll wait to see. You know, what's interesting is this week there's also some other big moves in the heavyweight division. The Duffy and Mir fight that we talked about a couple weeks ago, obviously getting signed. We just said that. And if you missed yesterday, the UFC inked Josh Barnett and Roy Nelson to a fight in the main event of UFC Japan, which I think is a very exciting fight in the heavyweight division.
That should be a lot of fun for Josh Barnett in Japan.
And they're going to coach against each other on the Ultimate Fighter that will take place in Japan. So,
wait, how many Ultimate Fighters are going on right now?
All of them. Like, everybody's a coach.
What do we got? Brazilian?
You got the Black Zillions and American Top Team going on right now.
That's right now.
And then yesterday, it was Roy Nelson and Barnett signed to UFC Tough Japan.
Okay.
And then this morning, you got signed Yoel Romero and Machida. They are going to do Tough Brazil. That's going to be four? Yeah, Tough Brazil 4.
I heard something about Misha Tate. Was that not a thing?
If there's a Misha Tate thing, I've not seen.
I know
it.
She did it once. Maybe I'm just getting them all confused,
yeah,
honestly. So. I can't keep up. Which ones are we supposed to keep up? We're supposed to be paying attention to Black Zillions ATT.
That's the one we're supposed to be
right,
paying
attention to. Right, because that's on TV, yes, here.
Because that one is on TV and not on Fight Pass.
I don't know what's happening
but what
anymore.
I'm saying is, like, you and I talking about the heavyweight division and Pride-esque fights. Roy Nelson and Josh Barnett, I think, is a very exciting fight, and one that, you know, you gotta, Josh doesn't fight as much as the rest of the heavyweights, so there's always that question, what sort of Josh Barnett is there? I mean, he obviously won his fight at Metamoris over the weekend with a really slick submission of a Gracie, so he's, again, a super dangerous dude on the ground.
And which Gracie?
All of them.
All of the Gracies.
You know, so you've got that question, and not that these guys would ever do this, but Roy Nelson, no slouch on the ground as well. We've talked at length at the number of guys that
How great would that be if they just went in there and decided just to grapple? Everybody's expecting heavyweight fireworks. Japan would actually love it.
They would totally love it. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited about that to see what happens. So with the heavyweight division, I think with a guy like Stipe, you've got all of these other people with their dance card full.
Mm-hmm.
And we wait to see what happens with Werdum and Kane if they actually make it to their fight. I'm knocking on wood right now just because you have to. But it's nice to have a guy like Stipe out there with a win like this because I think that's important.
Well, I did notice, too. I mean, he's up to 4. So, I mean, he's top 5 heavyweight right now, according
sure.
to everybody on the UFC rankings.
Absolutely. Wait, and you don't think a win over Mark Hunt puts you there? I mean, I certainly think he sits
no,
there.
I certainly think it's put you there. But, again, I think it speaks more to the division more than the fact that Stipe is – unbiasedly that good, is obviously that good. I mean, top 4 in the division, that's something you wouldn't necessarily expect after you see that fight. Of course, he laid a whooping on Mark Hunt. But it speaks more to that division. And, you know, heavyweights have always been like that.
Yeah,
they're not
going
to be the best athletes. There's going to be some dudes in there like Big Country Nelson that kind of muscle their way around. There's going to be dudes like Alistair in there that, you know, you never quite know who you're going to get because, you know, these big guys can gas sometimes. So I think it's a perfect spot for him. I won't argue about anybody underneath him. I mean, Josh Barnett's right there at 5. If Josh Barnett were 4 or 5 spots away, you know, maybe I get upset, but that's not the case. So he's right there in the mix with Travis Brown and Josh Barnett, which is, I think, the perfect spot for him right now.
Do you think there'll be a resurgence? This is a bit of an obscure question, but if you think back, I mean, you know, right now you said the heavyweight division not that deep. It's not quite as bad as when it was Tim Sylvia and Gan McGee for the heavyweight title. It's not quite that bad. But after you get past 5, it gets less and less interesting very quickly. Do you think as the UFC continues to expand and grow, do you any heavyweights out there that you think are going to kind of bring this interest level up? Because right now it's like you've got this fun fight between Josh Barnett and Roy Nelson. If Roy Nelson wins, it really doesn't do a whole lot. It'll move him up a little bit, but we already know where he is
mm-hmm.
against upper echelon guys. If Josh Barnett wins, it answers some questions. But outside of that, you have Stipe with no dance partner, and then essentially the rest of that division all locked up and doing stuff. Again, like we talked with Demetrius.
Well, I've told you before, and you hate it when I say it. We're going to see Kane and Junior Dos Santos fight 5 times.
Which I hate.
Werdum is the wild card in there. We're going to see. Well, we've got 3, right? We've got 3. So
yes,
all we need is 2 more. And we're talking about a bunch of dudes at the top of this division.
Not doing 2 more of these.
Why aren't we doing 2 more? Because what do we have? Kane's going to be fighting
Werdum.
Werdum, right?
To unify the title.
That's right, unify, because Verdum's the temporary champ, or the interim. The interim champ. So
not real champ.
It's coming up, I believe, at 188.
Yes.
So they'll fight. They could fight another time, but still, you're looking at this division where maybe there's another contender or two, and I just think when Junior Dos Santos comes back, I know he's not lined up for a fight right now, but, I mean, he's going to push himself right back to the top.
But you being the business-centric side of this podcast, you wouldn't put Stipe in there first? You would really put Junior Dos Santos in there again?
No, I'm not next, but, I mean, I'm looking at this division.
Right this second?
I mean, look, we still have Josh Barnett, Mark Hunt, Andre Arlovsky, and Alistair Overeem in the top 10.
This is a
division
like,
that's rather stagnant. So you can even with a fresh new face like Stipe Miocic or Travis Brown, you're still going to have to put some of these other dudes in. And what does Junior Dos Santos do? I mean, he's sitting at number 3 right now in the division. No, number 2.
He's 2 because he's not the interim champ.
Right. So, I mean, he's going to beat the
He drops down to featherweight. Okay.
That's a good move. But I mean, what else do you do with him? He's going to win his next couple fights. That's why they're not booking him.
That's the problem, though, right? Because, you know, this is the interesting thing about this sport, because you always had that person who ends up being the gatekeeper. We've long talked about Clay Guida was the gatekeeper at 155 for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. He was never really the guy who was going to get to the championship level and be successful, but he was the dude that if you wanted to test yourself and see if you could survive in the top 10, he was that guy. Now, this is a really interesting conundrum because you've got a guy at number two who beats literally everybody else on the planet except for the champion. He just cannot dial it in.
Yeah. And so that's why you're going to see him fight again. I mean, I'm glad you agree with me finally.
I don't agree with you because he can't dial it in. I just don't think he can beat him.
Right, but he still gets two more shots. Two more shots, probably. I'm thinking two.
All right.
I've got a five-year plan, and at least two of those fights, that's going to be Junior Dos Santos and Cain Velasquez. I'm not even saying that fifth fight's going to be for the championship.
Just those two.
Two fighting, just to finally settle it all for once.
The rest of the
after
card.
20 years.
The rest of the main card, if you missed it, Robert Whittaker beats Brad Tavares in round one. Sean O'Connell wins in round one over Anthony Parrish. And James Vick beats Jake Matthews in round one. So a very quick main card. I don't know that you're going to get a very quick main card tomorrow morning when you watch from the Philippines, but we will talk about that stuff in a minute. Ronda Rousey's book is out, and she's been doing the rounds, so mm-hmm. to speak, and finally got her book back in Walmart. There was a minute there that Walmart was going to sell the book because...
It's too violent.
Because it's far too violent.
It's far too violent.
Next to,
but do you need your bullets?
Next to bullets in Grand Theft Auto 5.
Hey, look, bullets don't kill people. People using bullets kill people.
People reading a Ronda Rousey book that own bullets. That's the problem. That's out. And if you're looking for some MMA read, and, you know, I know I can speak for myself, a huge fan of Ronda Rousey, and I like to see these sorts of things come out. Because I just think it's interesting insight into, even if the fighters ghostwrite it in the same way that like Brock ghostwrote his with Paul Heyman.
That was not a ghostwriter. Yes, I don't know why you keep saying that.
Because it was a ghostwriter. Even if you have somebody else write it, I like the interesting backstory to the fighters and where they came from. And I read as many of these as I possibly can. We were just talking, Uriah Faber's fighting this week. We'll talk about it in the next segment. But I was just talking to a friend about the Uriah Faber book and how much of a self-help book it was than it was a book about getting in the gym and doing some workouts and winning your fights. And it's interesting to see that perspective. Ronda, while I haven't had a chance to read the book this week, it's certainly the thing I'm going to grab this weekend and find her to be very, very exciting and a very interesting person and want to see what the book is all about.
Did you see the Sports Illustrated cover?
Of course I did.
She got the Sports Illustrated cover. UFC told everybody to like it on Facebook or whatever they did.
And that's what I do.
Did you see that?
Yes.
They sent out a message to all their fighters. Hey, please retweet, support, blah, blah.
Well, and the story behind that is interesting is that she's got an ex-boyfriend that has nudes and she wanted to do this nude deal because...
Well, no, you're talking about the ESPN one.
Yeah, sorry, the ESPN one. But like that one I think is a more interesting story that, you know, I've got to get out and do the body issue because I don't want this dude to put out naked photos of me.
Right. Yeah. Apparently he was just taking naked pictures, but she's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. I think the funny thing too, is the publicity she's doing for the book is letting us know all kinds of things too. Like apparently Ronda Rousey's on Tinder, but nobody will swipe right because she's too famous. Did you know that?
Did not know that.
So yeah, set the mile radius a little high and, I guess you got a shot.
A little high.
Yeah. A little high. I'm not sure. How high can that? I know you've got Tinder. I don't have it.
Clearly, I have Tinder. Yes.
How high can you go with the mileage radius?
I don't have any idea. But I mean, like, those are the sorts of interesting things that I like to get out of these things, especially when they're doing the press and they've got to give away little nuggets of the book.
Yeah, so, apparently she was Bryn Campbell on Tinder.
Bryn Campbell?
Yeah, she went for a different name, a nom de plume, so to speak. Did I get that right? I'm not even sure.
I think so. Nobody listening to this show is going to know. So, that's out. And then we, of course, in a week and a half, we get UFC, not John Jones, at UFC 187 when we're going to get Daniel Cormier and Anthony Johnson and Chris Weidman and Vitor Belfort. Want to let you know that we've once again partnered with Celebration Cinema. So we will have tickets to a bunch of their theater. So we're going to put that stuff up on Facebook this weekend and get you into that. So it'll be a theater near you. You can check that out on Memorial Day weekend, which I'm very excited about. Are you still excited about this card? You're looking at me like, whatever.
I'm very excited. I'm very confused by how Chris Weidman can't headline the card now versus Belfort. Even if you look on the artwork, if you look on UFC or Wikipedia, it's Johnson Cormier. And I get that you got to build those dudes up because they're about to win a title that neither of them really were able to beat the champ for. I mean, and you've got a real issue, you know, we'll get more into this as we get closer, but you got a real issue if Cormier wins, because you got a guy who just clearly lost to the guy who was champion. And again, I'm not saying he wouldn't deserve it, but I mean, perceptually, oh, okay, John Jones would kick his ass because we saw it happen. At least if, you know, Rumble Johnson wins, okay, we could have that argument all day. And if John Jones doesn't come back, which his manager was saying over these past couple weeks might be a real thing.
Whatever.
I'm not sure, but maybe he'll come back with a nom de plume.
Right, yes.
That's what Ron Rones.
Ron Rones.
What suspension?
Well, but don't you think he
mustache?
You know, the main card is headlined by this fight because it's in order of weight.
No. I mean,
that seems like a much better explanation that I'm going
what,
with.
What since when? Or else Ronda Rousey would always be at the bottom of the card. Unless Mighty Mouse is on it, because she's bigger than Mighty Mouse. But, I mean, that's only fair in that case. That's how they should run Mighty Mouse's cards. Like, he's just down at the... See, you started it. You asked me about the weight.
Well, I'm trying to answer this question for you because, yes, it, but while I think Chris Weidman...
I mean, Weidman beat Anderson Silva twice.
Dude, I get it. But the belt is up for grabs. Does that make it more exciting? I mean... The belt's vacant, right?
Oh, okay. Right. I guess vacant. In some weird WWE parlance, it's up for grabs. Well, they're both up for grabs, I guess.
Well, yeah, but
dude's got to defend it.
But one guy
there's
actually,
not a no DQ or 10 count.
One
type
guy
of deal
actually
here.
Physically has, you know, ownership of said belt, and he's going to walk to the, you know, to the ring as the owner of said belt.
See, that would be more interesting if you had to actually beat him and take the belt. Like, he gets to wear it until you get it off of him. Stop trying to make excuses.
That's not what I'm doing.
They screwed this up.
I'm not trying to do this.
I just don't understand how Chris Weidman can't have the headlining spot now.
No, I follow that you can't.
Because I feel like that's your dude right now, by the way, in UFC. Because you got
John
Jones.
More so than Ronda?
Well, guy and girl, I guess. But that's your guy right now. I mean, you can't have one star. And right now, they've got Ronda. And I thought Weidman, but he doesn't seem to be getting a lot of pub here. And I'm sure that they want whoever wins the light heavyweight championship to be one of those dudes. Because they're in a tough spot right now as far as being able to sell pay-per-views. If you're not fighting Conor McGregor, nobody's interested right now. I mean, it's weird to see two championship fights on a card. They're going to have a tough time with Memorial Day weekend. And I know they traditionally do some holiday weekends, but Memorial Day weekend is always through the weekend. People make those weekend plans.
They're
July
gone.
4th can
right.
land on some
right.
spot, so we end up with like a July 7th card or whatever it ends up being. This is going to be a tough one, and it's stacked, and I'm looking forward to it, but I can be honest. I don't know if I'm going to see it live, just the way my weekend's working that weekend. I really want to. I want to get out to Celebration, but I don't know. It's going to be basically a day of and to see how it's working. So I find it interesting. We've got these two championship fights. And, man, right now we got to talk a little bit about, you know, a guy like Mark Hunt, and then we're going to be talking about Edgar Faber, which is a huge match, but it feels like everything's taking a little bit of spotlight away from what they've got coming up on Memorial Day weekend. So,
I think that the schedule itself certainly does that, but part of it, don't you think, is, and while this has nothing to do with your displeasure with Weidman not being at the top of the card, is part of it is some of the more exciting fights this year are still getting busted up by injury, where you've got Nurmagomedov, who's supposed to fight Donald Cerrone, blows his other knee out training for this thing, and you get John McDessie and Donald Cerrone, which is not nearly, it's great for McDessie, but it's not nearly as exciting as finding out if Donald Cerrone has what it takes to be the next title contender.
So I think it's interesting too. I mean, you may have heard the UFC is obviously rebuilding their Vegas base, and as part of that they want to put in a rehab center. So what we've heard from Dana White
for
and
drugs or
no
okay
not yet no a physical rehab center to make sure these guys are doing the work, because right now in MMA basically you have a guy who gets hurt and he's just on his own, and they're not following up to know what's going on with the doctors. Essentially the UFC's
right.
like, hey, are you okay, can you get cleared? What they want to do is take more of an NFL type of approach to the situation. If you get hurt in the NFL, you're with team doctors. You're doing your rehab, and everybody knows the schedule. Everybody knows what's going on. I think a lot of times these dudes are beating each other up in camps, and Dana White has said that over the past months or so. He's tired of these dudes kicking the crap out of each other against world-class athletes. Now, I get it. A team like American Top Team, you got world champion contenders in there, and they're fighting each other. Is that the smartest way to go? I don't know. You look at these injuries that are happening. Should you be fighting the best in the world? in training and sparring, or should you be trying to hone your skills as best you can? I mean, boxers don't full out fight other boxers when they're getting ready for fights. They get sparring partners. They get guys who are probably not at their level that can take their hits and can give them a little bit of a workout. You know, in these fight, in these, Daniel Cormier just posted a picture a couple weeks ago, face all busted up, hard training session. If you're Dana White, you got to go, what are you doing, man? What's going on? One, you know, one broken nose,
right?
One cut in the wrong spot. You break an orbital bone. I mean, you're out of this championship fight. I just lost half my card. And that, I think that was that picture went up. And I think that's when Dana started making the remarks. These guys got to stop kicking the crap out of each other in training. So that's another aside to breaking up all the fights that you want to see.
I don't think it's an aside. I think it's an important part of that. And that, you know, that rehab center might be the key to that whole thing because, yeah, even if Sean was here, you'll never be able to explain to me how literally pretending that you're a Spartan and if you can quote unquote survive the training that you get to the fight, that that's a logical way to run your career.
I think it's becoming...
I mean, it would be like, to use your NFL, you know, like, well, in order for me to get the pads on Sunday, I've got to practice all week with nothing. Just running into human beings with nothing on to prove that I'm tough enough to play on Sunday. That, to me, is the same thing. There is leg protection, elbow protection, hand protection, head protection. There's a ton of stuff that you could spar all day long and not look like that and still get a workout in and... you know, work on your skill set without having to get concussions to prove that you're ready to fight Anthony Johnson.
And I do. I think that's a very old school way. And I know there's some guys coming around, but I think at a certain point it's going to hurt these guys. And if they're out of fights and they're getting beat up, then they're not going to get to fight. And if the UFC starts putting these protocols in, I know a lot of fighters between this and, you know, we talked about the Reebok deal last week and all of these types of things, they're getting more hands on. And it's going to be a play our way or don't play at all type of game with the UFC. Not that it hasn't been, but I think the fighters are really going to start seeing more of that as you kind of move along. Okay, you're injured. You're under contract to us. Here's what you have to do. You have to check in with our doctors. Here's our rehab center. You need to be doing this 3 to 4 times a week. You know, I think you're going to see a lot of these fighters, especially at the upper levels of the card. You're going to see guys that are at championship level or contender level that are doing this as a living, because we know some guys aren't.
Sure.
Even in the UFC on those lower ends of the cards. But you're going to see those dudes that they're going to have to check in. They're going to have to make sure that they're doing the work they're supposed to do, because a lot of times guys will not get things done that they should get taken care of because they want to make it to that next fight. Then they get injured anyways because you didn't have an MCL through half of your camp. And you
right.
should have probably gotten that taken care of a long time ago. So I certainly think training methods are something that all the fighters are going to have to look at as they're moving forward. And that Daniel Cormier picture, it's funny. It was before Dana even said anything, I think. And I looked at it and I go, should you really be doing that? And I get accidents happen and you're going to post stuff on Twitter. But, man, you got a title fight in like 3 weeks.
A big one, right?
With a pretty big one.
A vacant title that they,
one you could actually win this time.
Right. Right.
So what are you doing? Don't you know where you are and know what you have to work on? And I only use this because it's a big example from the past week. When you saw Floyd Mayweather in his training videos, and I get we don't see everything, what's he doing most of the time? He's hitting Freddie Roach on pads.
Yep.
He's not even fighting other dudes. He's hitting bags. He's hitting pads. I get you can't grapple like that, but I think that's a way that fighters need to be working towards, finding a way to do some light grappling, finding ways to kind of get in there, you know, get some sweat in and work some certain things, because these dudes are just getting injured left and right. And this and the new drug policy after July, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm very curious to see.
Yeah, it's fast. It's going to be fascinating. So you take the new drug policy, the injuries, and then, you know, as we talked about, you take the Reebok deal, right? So if you're out of a fight and you're, even if you're Nurmagomedov, right? You're 21-0, but not all of those are in the UFC. So you're not at the $40,000 level. You're maybe at the $5,000 level, and you haven't fought in almost a year.
Yeah, and he's a guy that I'm talking about where. You know, I don't think this is necessary. This is his living, but he's going to be a dude that's going to have to do something else. Because remember, all these fighters, whatever they make, a lot of their camps are set up around guys like this. When you could eventually be a world champion, when you could eventually move up the ladder, your camp starts to revolve around you. Well, when that happens, people got to start getting paid. There's a guy that's got to pay for the lights. There's a guy that's got to pay for all these dudes that are around.
The food, the travel, everything
that's involved there. And the UFC does what they can, but I mean, and they see a star in Nurmagomedov, so I'm sure he'll be fine, but it's just a situation where, you know, these guys got to fight, and if they're not healthy enough, they can't do it, and it's going to hurt the UFC, and it's going to hurt the fighters, and the UFC is being proactive in that.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about UFC Fight Night 66, which will be available for you to watch tomorrow morning on Fox Sports 1 while you're drinking your coffee, because it's, as Joe would say, one of the cards that's not for us. That said, anytime Frankie Edgar is going to fight Uriah Faber, I'm going to say, forget you, this is a fight for everybody. And we'll talk about it next. It's Way of the Warrior. It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hulkrin, along with Ken Evans, brought to you by Celebration Cinema as they celebrate UFC 187 Memorial Day weekend. Tickets available right now, CelebrationCinema.com, and we will be giving them away on Facebook and Twitter. Just search WOW Show, and we'll be doing that all the way up till showtime next Saturday night. UFC 66, it is taking place at the Mall Asia Arena. And in Manila.
Is it a mall?
It's in a mall.
It's like in a mall?
Like old school WCW.
Oh, like when the Monday Night War started.
Yes, when
the Mall of America.
This is exactly what it's like.
Is there a pasta mania at the Mall of the Philippines?
Going to start at 7 a.m. Eastern, and the main card starts at 10 a.m. Eastern and is spotlit by Frankie Edgar and Uriah Faber, which I could not be more excited about.
No, this is a really cool fight. I'm looking forward to this. I mean, it's another thing where you got to set the DVR because we got such a weird time. I'm not sure if I'm going to be home during it. I'm going to try to be home by noon. I'm imagining the main event won't start before noon, right?
I don't think so, no.
This is cool. This is kind of a fight that, you know, a couple years ago would have been a dream matchup. I mean, it's still a big matchup, but I want to see who wins this one. This should be fun.
What do you see happening here?
I have no idea, honestly. I would say, after the way Faber's been lately, that this should be his fight. But it's Frankie Edgar. It's a guy, every time he goes into a fight and you don't think he's going to win, he turns everybody's world upside down and then...
Well, it's funny you say that, because right before Tough 21 started, which is the Black Zillions and ATT series, they had the top five fights of all time, mm-hmm. right? And one of them was the series between Frankie and Gray Maynard, where, like, every fight, Gray Maynard literally knocks Frankie's head off in the first round, mm-hmm. and Frankie comes back and somehow wins the fight.
Yeah.
And I think this will be a very similar scenario. The only thing that... I think might be different is Uriah's going to come out hot and Frankie's going to come on late if he gets that chance. But the way that Uriah Faber has been setting up that standing guillotine, you know, where he
yep.
or standing rear naked choke, you know, where he essentially electric chairs you.
Yeah, he grabs you and then you're on the ground. And
you know, I just think they've been so slick and he's getting so good at getting in that position on guys and finding new ways to get in that position that this fight fascinates me to death because I like Frankie's hands. Everyone likes Frankie's hands. His mm-hmm. boxing is crisp. And he might be able to attack Uriah a little bit or at least slow Uriah down. But those first two rounds make me a little nervous for Frankie.
I definitely think that could be an issue. If you get a situation where Uriah is going off in the way he wants to, it's going to be tough, but I mean, you said it again. We've seen fights with Frankie Edgar where he goes in there, he's getting knocked around. The fight's over. Might as well turn it off after three. They're just going that decision. The guy's going to win, and Frankie just turns it back on. So, man, I don't know who to call in this fight. I mean, if you just look right at the fight, I think almost everybody would just kind of look at it and go, Uriah's got this one. Look how he's been fighting lately. The only guys he's got losses to really are Jose Aldo and Dominic Cruz a couple
sure.
years back.
Yep.
So... those are really top-level guys. Not saying that Frankie Edgar's got much worse losses, because he doesn't. But if you just were to look at this fight from the outside and just kind of look at it and go, huh, who's going to win? Probably Uriah Faber. I don't think anybody can do that, though, very confidently with the other guy that's in the cage with him.
No, and that's, of course, what makes this fight very exciting, because you essentially, like you just said, you know sort of what's going to happen, at least in the first round and a half, and then after that it becomes the Frankie Edgar game. You know, one of the things about Frankie that we've all liked is when he was at 155, he fought at 155. I mean, he was 156, 157.
Right, yeah, right? He wasn't like, really cutting.
Didn't really cut anything, and he was just one of the fastest people at that weight division. Wasn't the biggest, but, you know, punches and bunches, and he would just wear you out and, you know, find a way to win. And that's what I think makes this so compelling, because it's going to be two high-output human beings going at each other. The co-main event, Gegard Mousasi, Kostas Philippou, this gets interesting because, A, you constantly have to wake up Gegard Mousasi and let him know he's fighting, because it never seems like he's...
Even like, at the Mall of Asia Arena?
He's literally like the most placid human being in all of MMA. Kostas Philippou has not fought in a year, and so I would say that Gegard Mousasi is not a great tune-up fight for most...
Most people. I would say, getting back into it and Gegard Mousasi being the guy you're fighting, that's not exactly what you'd want to look forward to. I think this is an interesting middleweight fight. There's a couple interesting middleweight fights, too, because I know Mark Munoz is on the card, too.
And, he, you know, win, lose, or draw, though, he's done, which I think is interesting. He says he's got other things to do, and he wants to be a family man and go do some traveling.
Good for him.
He's going to be taking on Luke Barnett. And if you've been following Barnett, he's been doing some really cool stuff on Instagram, as he's been in the Philippines for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been kind of, you get to see his traveling and what he's been doing. And it's been fun to kind of see the stuff that he's been doing. But Mark Munoz, whatever happens, this will be his last fight. And he has said a couple times, as people have interviewed him this week, that he wants to be one of those fighters who does what he says. Mm-hmm. And not the, I'm going to retire and I'll see you in January of 2016. You know, not one of those sort of retirements. He wants to actually retire. The most interesting fight that isn't the main event for me is Lim versus Magny. And Neil Magny has on a 6-fight win streak. And I find him to be one of the more fascinating people in the UFC. Won 5 fights in 2014. He's obviously won 1 fight in 2015. This could be his second. Lots of questions, though, if Neil is ready for this step up, as Lim is somebody who's going to, again, much like Uriah Faber, he's going to come at you and come at you in droves, and it'll be interesting to see if Neil can either weather that storm or has an answer for it. And if he does, I think this is clearly a graduation to a top-tier position for him and some big stuff coming for the rest of 2015. Big fan of Neil Magny, and if he wins 7 in a row, I think you can't help but start talking about getting him into the top 5 and then eventually a title contention.
Yeah, no, I'm not exactly a hometown fight, but I mean, he's South Korean and this is going to be in the Philippines, so that's about as close as you get when you're in the UFC. So, I mean, he's going to have a big presence in the crowd there as well, so it'll be interesting to see if Magny can step up to a couple of different challenges there.
And I think that going back to what we were talking about in the first segment, that the organization needs this, right? They need to start building more stars that are marketable, and not that saying tomorrow morning, that Neil Magny wins this fight, he becomes a pay-per-view draw. That is not what I'm saying. But
top of the card with Chris Weidman.
Clearly, he's going to be way above Chris Weidman in all of his fights going forward. But I mean, this organization, I should say, needs to build some stars in different arenas. And if you're going to go to these places and you're going to put on these, as Joe Kidd's, these not for us cards, you want people that are going to be a draw. Because when we go back and talk about the Poland Krakow card, it was essentially like a local MMA card that happened to have Krokop on it, right? Nobody knew any of the fighters on there if you were just casually watching.
Well, you have to wonder, though, even in that regard, if this kind of card, if you can do that. I mean, it's 10 in the morning. And again, I told you earlier, I don't plan on being able to see the early part of the card. So if I don't hear about something happening, it's not going to really matter how impressive the performance is. Like if you come in here and tell me, yeah, Magny dominated him for 3 rounds. Did you see it? No. Am I going to go back and look at it? Probably not. If you tell me he knocked him out in the first, maybe I'll go back and look at that. But it's interesting in these situations. I don't know what you do. I mean, we're in a sport now where we certainly think maybe the apex hit a while back. So we're wondering, what do you do? You've got so much of this sport. Is it star making to put this dude on at 10:15 in the morning?
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying like he wins this fight, mm-hmm. right? Because most people don't even know who Lim is, So
right.
If you don't know who that is, you're not making a star. But if he wins against Lim, and gets escalated to a pay-per-view main spot. That's what I'm saying. Like, this is the next
right.
step to putting him in a place that maybe you will watch him.
Okay, I can see that, because otherwise I look at almost, I mean, even if we look at the card last week, it still looks like almost a local card that Mark Hunt was on. I mean, right. Seriously.
Well, I mean, there was a ton of Australian fighters, and if you're not into the Australian scene or not...
And I'm not saying they shouldn't do that.
Sure.
But I'm just saying when you look at these cards, I turn them on very often. And they just kind of run through I don't know what's going on during the fights at the beginning. I'm not staring intently. I'm usually on my phone. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I'm on my computer. I'm doing something else. Like, I don't start to hear bells ring in the ring until, like, that second or that from the top or that
right.
top fight on these cards. That's just how they are, and that's fine. I think it's fine. Kind of interesting. You made a point there. Okay, maybe you move them here and you move them to a pay-per-view. You know, we could have some very impressive fights on this card. How much does it matter, those dudes? They're running so hard and so fast. It's very interesting to kind of keep a look on that side of it.
Do you think, I mean, we've sort of talked about this, but I was having a conversation this week with a friend of mine about the WWE model, and perhaps that maybe they have too many pay-per-views so that the storylines don't get the traction that they need, and you know, you don't get those WrestleMania moments outside of WrestleMania, all of those things, and that's not necessarily what I want to talk about, but you just made a reference to the fact that we're going so fast, so far. Every week that we come in here and do this show, you know, if you go back and listen to 273 episodes ago, episode one, we were not talking about two events the following week and one event coming up this weekend and then an Ultimate Fighter season and then six other Ultimate Fighter seasons going on in an ecosystem that you may or may not, like, that wasn't happening.
No, if you were to listen to those shows, you'd probably hear us for 4 weeks talking about one event, and more than likely we had fighters from the event all the way up to the event. That, and right now, I mean, it's hard even just to schedule some of these guys because everything's moving so quick. And it's interesting to kind of really look at that dynamic because let's go back 200 episodes, whatever you want to do. This Weidman card, I'm going to call it the Weidman card. This Weidman card we would have been talking about in depth by this point.
Sure.
In depth by this point. We would have probably broken down a couple of the fights, looked at the fighters, what they've done before, what they've done in the past week, but right now we're caught up in this situation where, you know, we've got to basically cover UFC Asia or UFC Australia, which is great for the company, but you have to look at it. It's definitely diluting the brand, and it's definitely taking some focus away because everybody in MMA media wants to always know who every fighter is and be on top of every fight. I'm not like that. So I don't know how much I fit in, but you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. But I think, if you don't do this for a living, right? Like, you and I do this as a passion project. So it's difficult for two guys who don't do this for a living to know the nuance of every one of the 518 fighters on the roster. Right?
Right.
And if you and I can't do it, how do you get that boiled down to the Buffalo Wild Wings fan?
I don't know what you do at this point. I really don't. I mean, I think you've got the big pay-per-views. You hope guys pop here and there. And you've had that with Weidman. You've had that a bit with Conor McGregor. But, I mean, is anybody left? I mean, that's what you really have. A lot of people still think the UFC heavyweight division, like, oh, is that the guy Brock lost to? I mean, seriously.
Right,
that's what
right.
you'll get asked. You know, because, I mean, with the injury, Cain Velasquez never really got to be that dominant heavyweight we thought was going to happen. I mean, right now you got two dudes with a belt. How do you can't boil that down to your Buffalo Wild Wings crowd. Why do they both have belts? Well, this guy was injured, but then this guy came in and he didn't have a knee injury, so he got to fight and he fought the other guy. He didn't fight. How many belts are there? I mean, it's hard because you've got to have guys that basically you can put on that card, and we don't have GSP anymore. You don't have Anderson Silva anymore. You don't have John Jones anymore. I mean, we talked about GSP and Anderson earlier this year. Basically, in each step as these guys kind of fell out, who would have thought that? Who would have thought that? Who would have thought that? Now John Jones? I don't know. This all tumbles down. This all relates. This all goes back to, you know, this one guy having to fight this guy, you know, in Asia at 10 in the morning. That's how this all trickles down.
Sure.
Because if you've got so many cards and so few stars, you kind of tend to have so few spots to highlight anybody.
Well, and it goes to, well, do a little inside pool here for a second, because I know that some of you sort of like this, and this will all tie back together. You know, when Ken and I worked at the same radio station, we would talk about events and an event strategy, about building it not so much around the things that you have on the stage, because you don't have a lot of control over those things.
Mm-hmm.
Build it around the party atmosphere. You're coming to this event because it's going to be a party, which is what it feels like you're saying, right? You're not watching Neil Magny, you're watching the UFC.
Right.
I am watching the UFC. Whatever that thing is,
right.
The star power be damned, because there isn't any. Now we're just going to watch, which I don't know I don't know that there's much.
That works. That works. But that
does
works.
It?
That works.
What other sport does it work in?
That work. The NFL.
You don't watch the NFL.
Oh, come on. If there's a Carolina-Tampa game on, it's going to be the highest rated thing on Monday night. It doesn't matter that stupid Carolina-Tampa. But it works for the NFL because they only do it 16 times a year. and they do it in one run.
But it
doesn't work with the UFC because here's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
It doesn't work with the it would work with the UFC if they weren't running a freaking card every week or two cards every weekend. There's no sense of urgency for me to see a fight. Man, I haven't seen. Remember when we would just scratch and dig and claw all over the internet to find a Pride fight?
Uh-huh.
Because there was no content. There was nothing out there. There's content every week. I'm going to have 15 fights by noon tomorrow that I haven't consumed yet. I will have those, and I will have to get through those if I want to watch those. And just the way I said it, I have to get through those. It's becoming almost labor intensive to do that sometimes. So this would work, except there's not the scarcity of product necessary for the UFC to simply sell.
Well, there's not only the scarcity, but I think the one bit that I will change to your argument is I certainly see what you're saying about Monday Night Football. Mm-hmm. It's event watching. However, every single one of those Monday night games affects whatever team you have an allegiance to.
Mm-hmm.
Your team goes up or down in the rankings based on what happens, whether or not they're on TV. That is not how, quote unquote, the UFC works. Neil Magny winning or losing tomorrow night has nothing to do with your love affair with Chris Weidman.
Fair enough.
Right? So you have to dial back the events.
Well, I think gambling's going to play a role in it, too, if you want to use that Monday night example. We need more gambling in the UFC. That's what we need.
We clearly need more gambling. Okay. Make sure you check Facebook this weekend. We'll have not only the results of the Mall of America that's in Asia, in the Philippines, as Frankie Edgar and Uriah Faber go mano a mano, but we will also have details on how you can get tickets to check out Memorial Day Celebration Cinema, UFC 187, Weidman versus Belfort, and oh, yeah, Anthony Johnson and Daniel Cormier will also be there as well.
That's right.
You can win those tickets online. Just search WOW Show on Twitter and Facebook. Have a great weekend. We'll talk soon.